Our Falling Into Place series spotlights the important work of and fosters collaboration between not-for-profit organizations in our communities, allowing us all to fall into place. Falling Into Place is supported by the Seymour Fox Memorial Foundation, providing a helping hand to turn inspiration into accomplishment. See more possibilities, see more promise, see more progress. This morning, we are joined by folks from MAMI, which is the Multicultural Association of Medical and Legal Interpreters of Central New York. We're going to find out about their organization this morning. We welcome the executive director, Cornelia Brown, to the program. Cornelia, good morning.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Very nice to have you with us. And we also welcome Diane Mbambo.
Hi.
Did I do
yes,
okay?
Yes, you got it right.
Mbambo.
Thank you.
I love your name. It's from, and you are the Albany office liaison, and it's a great pleasure to welcome you both to the program. So talk to us a little bit about MAMI and how this organization came to be and what ultimately you do. Because you're across the country, correct?
No, not across the country, across upstate New York.
Across upstate New York.
And actually, Okay. Across means from Albany through Syracuse. And then we do go up to Watertown and down to Binghamton with some of our services.
But are there other organizations like this across the country?
There are other, we're a nonprofit, and so we're in the minority as a nonprofit, but there are some other nonprofits offering interpreter services in different cities around the United States, and there are probably many more for-profits, but as I want to explain, I think there's a special niche for nonprofits in the area of interpreting and translating and language access.
Okay, so what was the need, what was the necessity for you to organize this particular organization?
Sure, so our informal mission is giving everyone a voice because when we started, which was in the mid-1990s in Utica, which had about one-third of the population refugees and immigrants, there were many people who needed medical services and services across the community, like schools and courts, who couldn't understand English. So when you go to the doctor, you have the right to informed consent. And when you're in court, you have the right for due process to understand and be understood. But all of those things can't happen unless you have the help of somebody called an interpreter. That's a skilled person who can ensure communication, understanding between people speaking different languages. So we needed to start our organization because when we began, there were no skilled interpreters at all in our area, and I believe really anywhere across upstate New York.
So the job is, how do the people ultimately come to you? And then I would assume that there are a million different scenarios that you could tell us about how you're put into service of how you help people in that interpretation.
Right. So when we started, since there were no interpreters, there were no training course. So we got together. Well, before people started coming to us, I have to say we got together a grassroots group of doctors, lawyers, refugees, immigrants, and decided that there was a need and knew that the informed consent law and due process and the Civil Rights Act were on our side. And we decided that we could start an organization. So we began by training interpreters. And just to get back to your question, so we set up a first training for medical interpreters, and we began to recruit out in the refugee community to find people that were fully bilingual. And we had to test their skills in language and do a criminal background check and things like that. But once we did that, we found people who were eager to be the communication mediator, and trained them, and we got going that way. So it takes a lot of work to reach out to the community and find the right people.
So, Diane, what goes into that training of an interpreter and getting a trained interpreter versus a volunteer, say?
Yes, this is a very interesting question. Myself, before I joined MAMI recently, I used to be a volunteer. It means I used to help people from my community with different interpretation setting. But I thought at the time that I was really doing what it was supposed to be done as an interpreter. But after I get trained and I learn about how to become an interpreter, I really noticed how I was making so much mistakes. Knowing another language, as I know, doesn't make you an interpreter, because it is a profession by itself that comes with the do and don'ts. I will give you a few examples, like the way you the place you're supposed to sit as an interpreter is a specific way, the way you have to introduce yourself, to explain to people which role you are taking, and you're speaking always at the first person, and you also have a certain body language. So there is really, I'll say, a few boundaries and also a protocol being an interpreter. So there is definitely a difference in my way of helping the community now that I've been trained than I used to do before.
So what are some of the, I'll ask this to both of you, but first I am, but what are some of the challenges in being accurate in what you're doing?
Yes, being accurate can be sometimes kind of difficult. Why am I saying that? People coming from different backgrounds. Myself, I'm coming from Africa, and we do sometimes we are not able to provide such certain services in a medical setting. For instance, I will give the example of Pap smear exam. Mm-hmm. It's an exam is really, I would say, so far, I don't want to give any wrong information. It should be something's very new or even not existing in Congo. So when I came here myself, when I need to take that exam, they re-explained to me what was going to happen to me. And I had also an opportunity to interpret for a pregnant woman from the Congo. So there is no word in Swahili, for instance, for pap smear. So I have to explain to her basically what will happen to her based on my own experience I had before. And that is kind of the challenge we're having to being accurate.
That's great. So another challenge is something called false friends, that it often happens that two languages will have the same word or a word that looks the same, but it will usually mean something different in the two languages. And if an interpreter is untrained, they may well use this a look-alike word in the second language, so essentially the same word, and make a big mistake. Like, here's an example. There was a very famous case, or infamous, in Florida. A Spanish-speaking patient said he was intoxicado. An untrained staff member interpreted that as intoxicated, so the doctors checked for, like, a drug overdose. But the actual meaning of that word, intoxicado, in Spanish is different. It has to do with blood poisoning.
Oh.
Because of that mistranslation, the patient very sadly ended up as a quadriplegic, and there was a settlement of $71 million just over that one word. So one of the things an interpreter has to watch out for is do what we call interpret the meaning, not the word itself. And that's tricky. You have to be aware.
So we think of this on the surface as interpreter, being an interpreter and interpretation, but we're also getting into many legal areas as well.
Right. Well, first of all, I was explaining that under the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and some additions in the 70s, it is considered discrimination based on national origin so that one doesn't discriminate based on national origin. It's necessary to provide a qualified interpreter for people who speak a different language.
Right.
So there's that legal justification for all the work we're doing and a requirement for the quote-unquote qualified interpreter. But beyond that, there's a need for interpreter in legal settings. As I was saying, the court is based on a concept of due process, which is an idea of mutual understanding. You have to, as the defendants say, you have to be capable of being understood and of understanding the process. So you need to have a trained interpreter in court, too, in order for justice to be done. So that's part of our training, is that we also train people as court interpreters, and we train people to work in sort of quasi-court settings, like how to help domestic violence victims and how to work in child abuse cases.
So what is the hardest part, Diane, in we've been talking about some of the challenges for interpreters, but even for you of coming into this as a volunteer, because I assume that no two cases are alike, right? Everything is different. You're doing different things all the time.
Yes. Talking about the challenges, I would say the training itself is something is in a school setting. You have to, you know, be focused and to learn. There is different terminology. So I feel like going back to school, I have kids, so it's kind of a challenge for me.
Sure.
But still, it's very, very interesting to learn. And it's amazing the way you sometimes you think you're doing things correctly, but you're really doing things in a wrong way. And when I used to be a volunteer, I really wanted to help, but sometimes I was being very harmful to the people I was helping. For instance, as an interpreter, a trained interpreter, you don't have to give your own point of view or to judge or to give advice. But in the past, because I was not trained and aware of that, I was kind of standing in one side and just trying to advise people in how to do. It's also hard as an interpreter trained not to do that, because, you know, as a person, you just have to give the information that you receive from point A to point B. So you really have to be, step aside and just being that conduit of information.
So how could the community help your efforts and what you're doing?
Right. So we believe right now there are many organizations providing interpreters, but we think that we are outstanding in some important ways. First of all, we provide a lot of training opportunities. So one way the community can help us, as Seymour Fox and other foundations have funded many of our interpreter trainings. Another difference that we'd like to make, and we're one of the few nonprofits in the field, is to offer pro bono interpreting. We work with a legal project in Albany, and we're interested in doing pro bono interpreting to support lawyers helping people threatened, say, with deportation. And so donations would be very helpful for that. And lastly, we have a training course coming up in Albany. We're teaching people to be medical interpreters and to interpret in the schools, an 88-hour course that starts on April 21st. So we're very interested in having people sign up for that, people who are fully bilingual and can pass a medical test and a background test. Please contact us.
We have your web address and all the information that people will need on our website at wamc.org. It's connected with this interview. So if you just go to wamc.org, and you'll find this Falling Into Place interview there with Mommy, and then you can just click and find the information right away. And and a legal background doesn't hurt, I assume, for an interpreter.
Oh, that is wonderful, actually. A legal background tends to give people stronger language skills, and it will also help them pass another course that we have is to train people to get state certification, and so they'd be very strong candidates.
Well, it's all good stuff, and you can find out more information by going to our website, wamc.org/roundtable. And it is MAMI Interpreters, which stands for the Multicultural Association of Medical and Legal Interpreters of Central New York. Cornelia and Diane, I thank you so much for the great work you're doing and for sharing with us this morning.
Thank you for speaking with us. We really appreciate the opportunity to speak.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe.
Be well. Falling Into Place is supported by the Seymour Fox Memorial Foundation, providing a helping hand to turn inspiration into accomplishment. See more possibilities, see more promise, see more progress.